All right. Good morning, everybody. Today is Monday, October 2nd, 2017. And this is Before the First Cup with Jules here on UCY.TV. Happy Monday, everyone. It is a chilly 46 degrees, overcast and kind of damp here in upstate New York. So where do we leave off on Friday? We titled the show FDA, Clones, Chimeras, CRISPR, the DOD, and farm food, and that is with a PH. We looked at a lot of different technologies that maybe we did and maybe we didn't know were in use already today. We discovered that in 2008, the FDA had approved cloned meat and said there was no difference between cloned meat and traditionally fathered meat. And that if farmers wanted to voluntarily hold off for the time being putting it onto market, that at some point in the future, once they put it on the market, they wouldn't have to label it. So it's been going on for 9 years at least that we potentially not only could be eating cloned meat, but also milk from cloned animals, and that would include cows and goats. And we read about a different one, maybe even rabbits. But we looked at some disturbing things in regards to the food chain on Friday, and I'm going to change gears today because I ran across a few things that caught my attention over the last few days. By the way, if you can even believe it, I had to make a road trip to Buffalo this weekend. We have a family friend that I've known most of my entire life that is very sick, so I had to go visit for a little while. And when I came back yesterday, I plugged in my notebook that I've been using for the last 5 years to do all the editing and things that I do for the network. And I started getting beep codes and a black screen. It appears that something on the motherboard is starting to go. So I lost two computers last week. I think it's been a total of 5 here over the last couple weeks. It's been pretty crazy. So now I have to replace my notebook, which is my connection to the network when I am not sitting here in the office as a prisoner. So pretty unbelievable, but good thing, because there are some places out there that have some really nice looking reconditioned machines that you can get for a few $100 and with some good memory, Windows 7, not Windows 10 bullshit. And so I'm going to have to replace that one as well to get me back on my feet. All right, so anyway, we're going to take a look at AI. We have talked about DARPA and some of their artificial intelligence software that they are going to use to scan 80% of all IP addresses on the global internet to be able to determine whether or not there is some sort of botnet or rogue agent out there that needs to be scanned, bagged, and tagged, and potentially taken out if need be. Which is what is really making me wonder about some of this stuff. All right, so welcome to the age of AI-based super assistants. Because the way they get this out there is they sell it to the unsuspecting public as some sort of new bell or feature on their new $1,000 iPhone. So they can live without it. In 2013, the moving her, which was a virtual personal assistant named Samantha, quickly evolved from merely competent to awesomely so. And rather than merely scheduling meetings, Samantha becomes a life coach, cajoling the main character, Theodore, a writer, to publish his letters and move on with his divorce. And what's interesting, too, is we are feeding the machine little by little every single day that we interact with it. Voluntarily or involuntarily, because it's being pushed from every direction, we are giving data to the machine to learn more and more about humans and their foibles and the chinks in the armor and how our brain works and how to profile some of our behavior to be able to predict what we are going to do next. And that's where we're going to end up here today. The movie is science fiction. But those who are attuned to the rapid improvements in artificial intelligence say that a version of Samantha is on the near horizon. For businesses, the promise of AI is that Samanthas will be embedded across all aspects of the organization, and such agents will analyze data, discover patterns over time, and then make decisions based on predictive analysis. The outcome, well, the application of AI on this level will make businesses not only efficient, but also more profitable. So let's move ahead and not look at where this is going to end up. Machine learning, which is that branch of AI that empowers intelligent agents, is based on analytics. And analytics are merely the ability to record and play back information. Advanced analytics pulls out patterns in that data. Machine learning builds on that further by using algorithms to get better at discovering patterns over time. And the more data you feed it, the better it gets. The classic example of a machine learning is the ubiquitous newsfeed, which takes a basic instruction, which would be from showing users more of what they want to see, but it adapts by observing the user's behavior. If you click on pictures of puppies, for instance, you will see more puppy news in your feed. Jerry Overton, a data scientist and senior principal for analytics at DXC Technology, says that the current best use of machine learning is to optimize operations. They are doing things like monitoring service quality, augmenting decisions, and all-out automation, he said. For instance, in the transportation sector, companies are using machine learning to monitor and predict fleet infrastructure failure. And in healthcare, doctors are using machine learning to augment diagnoses, like Dr. Watson. And similarly, in manufacturing, companies are using this technology to simulate designs and create digital twins. And we found out about some of the digital twins also in healthcare that they are garnering from all of your medical scans. And for the average cubicle dweller, meanwhile, machine learning does something that borders on magic. It triages email, and although, truth be told, that is nothing new, is Mark Wilkinson, CTO for Workplace and Mobility at DXC, notes a spam filter uses Bayesian rules, which are one of the algorithms used in machine learning, to understand an email's value. We are beginning to see change when personalization starts coming in, says Wilkerson. And the technology might recognize his preference for emails related to some of his favorite topics and begin curating such emails on his behalf. The concept of personalization is about bringing an extra facet of value into what we receive and digest. And in other words, one person's spam is another person's must read. And that would be like my Google alerts on DARPA on a daily basis. A smart system informed by machine learning gets to know those user preferences. Having an intelligent agent sort and curate email will likely be a boon for productivity. A recent study showed that the average worker spends almost 17 hours writing, reading, and responding to work and personal emails every week. And I saw something recently, and I think Camille sent it to me, about Google and Kurzweil working on some sort of application that'll start writing emails for you. But as that efficiency multiplies, the outcome expands to everyone with intelligent assistants. And rather than go back and forth about scheduling a meeting, for instance, assistants can do it on their boss's behalf, taking into account the time, the place, and even the weather. And your AI assistant can also and will send an alert telling you when to leave for the meeting based on your current traffic conditions. Such efficiencies have prompted many businesses to adopt machine learning in a meaningful way, and a recent survey found that 60% of companies had already implemented AI and/or machine learning strategies, but adopting this technology isn't easy. Overton said that there are three major challenges to machine learning adoption: being able to understand the technology and seeing the return on investment, and being able to scale the technology. Understanding machine learning and AI is often hampered by unrealistic expectations. There's a lot of sensationalized material out there, says Overton, and success stories often don't explain how specialized a particular application of AI is. For example, an AI app that is great at prioritizing large collections of text documents may be incapable of summarizing those very same documents. Yes, then you got to get an add-on. For $29.95 user, it is important to understand something about the limits of technology so it is not seen as magic, says Overton. He recommends that taking courses to get a sense of what the technology can actually do. ROI, meanwhile, and that would be return on investment, can be addressed by focusing machine learning on particular business aspects, operate in small iterations, and finally, scaling, which can be the toughest toughest obstacle to overcome, and that would be rolling it out to the entire organization. There's a big difference between running a demo, which would be like probably 20 users, real small, and running something on your desktop and being able to create something that generates insight for the entire enterprise. Overton calls this process industrial machine learning, since it takes the machine learning technology and scales it to the whole operation. When it infiltrates a system, and that's exactly what it is doing, it can create insights at scale, and the system finds more efficient and smarter ways to do things in all aspects of your business. It is easy to see the value that this could provide for organizations of any size. So who's going to help that innovation happen? Well, guess what? Intel has just built a brand new neuromorphic chip, and that would be a computer chip that works like the human brain. Intel is already working on several chips designed to train and run deep neural networks faster. This chip is called LoHi, and the chipmaker hopes to solve a whole different class of AI problems. Intel has made several acquisitions and revamped its roadmap for deep learning. And this new portfolio extends from the Knights Mill and Lake Crest for training neural networks to the Xeons, the Alteras, and the Motivus vision processors. So they're going to go head-to-head with NVIDIA, their GPUs, for running these models. Now Intel has added another chip to the mix with its announcement of LoHi. This one, however, is a bit different. For starters, it isn't part of the company's AI product group, but rather Intel Labs, which spent about 6 years developing the test chip. In addition, LoHi has a completely different self-learning neuromorphic architecture with the potential to tackle a broader class of AI problems. The concept of a computer that mimics the brain isn't new. Caltech scientist Carver Mead began working on it in the 1980s and coined the term neuromorphic, but these have largely remained science projects with little commercial application. In an interview, Naranjan Srivasa, senior principal engineer and chief scientist at Intel Labs, explained why the company chose to go down this path. Moore's law scaling has allowed Intel to pack a lot more cores in a given area, and this week Intel announced its first mainstream desktop chips with 6 cores and began shipping the i9 chips with up to 18 cores. Well, that's the first that I've seen of that. But the truth is that many workloads can't exploit all of those cores, Srinivasa said, which led to a phenomenon known as dark silicon. In other words, it simply isn't efficient to light up all those transistors all the time. So to address this, the industry needs a more efficient architecture and complementary workloads that can take advantage of all of these cores. Intel and others have been inspired by the design of the brain because it is extremely efficient at what it does. The human brain has an estimated 100 billion neurons, each with up to 10,000 synaptic connections, or a total of some 1 quadrillion synapses, yet it operates on less power than a light bulb. Of course, neuromorphic chips can't close this to scale yet, and the 14-nanometer LoHi test chip is organized into 128 clusters containing 1,024 neurons for a total of around 130,000 neurons with 130 million synapses distributed across them. But the chip operates on similar principles, at least to the extent that we understand how the brain works. When the pulses or spikes are sent to a neuron and they reach a certain activation level, it sends a signal over the synapses to other neurons. Much of the action, however, happens in the synapses, which are plastic, meaning that they can learn from the changes and store this new information. Unlike a conventional system with separate compute and memory, neuromorphic chips have lots of memory. In this case, there would be SRAM caches on the chip located very close to the computing engines. There is no global clock in these spiking neural networks, and the neurons only fire when they have reached an activation level. The rest of the time, they remain dark, and this asynchronous operation is what makes neuromorphic chips so much more energy efficient than a standard CPU or a GPU, which is always on, and the asynchronous technology has its root in the Fulcrum Microsystems, a computer that Intel acquired way back in 2011, and it developed for Ethernet switching chips, but Srivastsan says that it was screaming to be used for other technology. Yes, yeah, screaming to get out. So what do you think of them, Apple? So Intel is going to be fueling new innovation with its neuromorphic chip at a consumer level. Lohi is not the first neuromorphic chip. IBM's True North, which was part of a longtime DARPA research project, is perhaps the best known, and other efforts have included Stanford's NeuroGrid, the Brain Scale System at the University of Heidelberg, the Spinnaker at the University of Manchester as well. These rely on boards with multiple chips, and in some cases with analog circuits that are trained offline. Intel says the same Lohi chip can be used for real-time training in inferencing, and learns over time, getting progressively better at what it does. We are the only ones that can handle all of these modes of learning on a single chip, says Srivastsan. The all-digital design actually consists of two 14-nanometer chips. It is a simple x86 processor that does a lot of pre-processing, which means it takes the data, encodes it into a format for spiking neural networks, and then transmits it to the neuromorphic chip, and then the neuromorphic mesh, both in the same package. So there's like some sort of mesh memory as well. Lohi is not a coprocessor, and the x86 chip will have a boot environment and a lightweight operating system and act as host through a system-level detail that is being worked out. The first chips will be fabricated in November of 2017 with plans to test them with leading university and research institutions with a focus on advancing artificial intelligence by the first half of 2018. By that time, Intel also plans to complete a software kit that will make it easier to convert data flow graphs to run spiking neural networks for supervised, unsupervised, and reinforcement learning. With roughly the same number of neurons as the brain of a mole. So we've moved to brains and moles now. Lohi is relatively small as far as neuromorphic chips go, but Intel says the architecture will scale to taking an advantage of the company's advanced processing technology. There is nothing preventing us from doing a lot more neurons and synapses because they are all the same. But for now, it remains a research project, and indeed, the name Lohi may be a subtle message as to how work is still left to be done. Located off the coast of the island of Hawaii, Lohi is the only volcano in the Hawaiian seamount that is in its earliest stages of development. These submarine volcanoes go through cycles of eruption, lava buildup, and erosion for millions of years to form islands. Hopefully, it will not take that long for the next big AI breakthrough. Dun, dun, dun. Well, don't worry about that, because there's all kinds of stuff going on in the land of transportation. We have read recently that Congress had fast-tracked the self-driving car bill, where they are taking control at a federal level to be able to push laws for self-driving cars. Well, self-driving cars could dramatically reduce the road toll. Removing humans from the driving equation, ding, ding, would save lives and dramatically reduce the cost associated with car accidents, says Swinburne's self-driving car expert. In a presentation to a seminar on future of travel, Dr. Dia said that human error was to blame for up to 90% of the 1.2 million deaths that occur each year from car accidents around the world. And this is out of phys.org, September 26, 2017. Those puny humans cause a lot of car accidents, and they could be avoided by using self-driving vehicles. And there's also compelling logic in removing humans, the key source of error, from the driving equation. Driven by artificial intelligence, these new vehicles will not make errors of judgment the way the human driver does. It will not drink and drive, and it will not fall asleep behind the wheel, and they will not get distracted playing Pokemon Go. Dr. Dia, who is chairman of Swinburne's Department of Civil and Construction Engineering, says that self-driving cars could potentially dramatically reduce insurance premiums. Oh, yeah, I bet they could. And if liability was shifted from the driver to the vehicle manufacturer. Under this scenario, which I doubt they're going to do that, insurers might move away from covering private consumers from risk tied to human error to covering manufacturers and mobility providers against technical failure. And while the road to vehicle automation is still long, Dr. Diaz says that some vehicle manufacturers, such as Tesla, were already rolling cars off the production line that were fully equipped with hardware needed for the car to one day drive itself. He said that this hardware includes 8 cameras, 1 radar, 12 ultrasound sensors, and a liquid-cooled supercomputer the size of a lunchbox, and an onboard computer that can perform more than 24 trillion operations per second. But while the hardware might be in place, Dr. Dria warned that the software needed for fully automated self-driving was a long way from being fully developed. Unlike the hardware, the software is not something that can be found off the shelf, he told the seminar. The software is calibrated by showing an artificial intelligence network examples of hundreds of thousands or even millions of videos and images of real-life conditions so that it can recognize and learn to respond to different situations. It is like holding the child's hand when crossing the road and teaching them what to do through constant experiences and replication. He says that the challenge for software companies was not in developing software that could detect objects, but in developing software that could understand objects. For example, if a human is driving down a suburban street and sees a soccer ball rolling out in front of the car, the driver would probably slow down since a child might be close behind, he said. Even with artificial intelligences, would a self-driving car know how to react? Well, that's a good question, but they're going to figure that out if they can. Driverless hover taxis make their first concept flight in Dubai. Yeah, you knew this was coming. Dubai is edged closer to its goal of launching a pioneering hover taxi service, with authorities announcing a successful concept flight was made on Monday, and that was the week of September 25th, 2017, without passengers. Safety features for the 2-seater air taxi include emergency parachutes. That's a good idea. Plus 9 independent battery systems, according to Dubai's Road and Transportation Authority. It said the prototype, supplied by Germany-based Volocopter, can fly for 30 minutes at a maximum speed of 100 kilometers an hour. The Dubai's Road Transportation Authority envisions that the hover taxi will eventually be integrated into the city's existing public transport system, which includes a metro system, trailway, tramway, and buses. Passengers will be able to book their autonomous air taxi and track its arrival and route using an application. Authorities anticipate 5 years of testing to put the safety procedures in place and legislation governing the cutting-edge mode of transportation. Home to Burj Khalifa, currently the world's tallest tower, Dubai is a leading tourist destination in the Gulf, attracting a record 14.9 million visitors last year. So flying hover, autonomous hover taxis in Dubai coming next. And now we also have the first autonomous drone delivery network flying above Switzerland starting in October. Like a futuristic postal service that delivers blood. We knew it was going to be blood or something like that, and it's all in the name of healthcare. Logistics company Matternet has announced a permanent autonomous drone network in Switzerland that will now see lab samples like blood tests and other diagnostics flown between hospital facilities, clinics, and laboratories. The first delivery network will be operational next month in October, so that's this month, with several more to be introduced next year. And Matternet says medical items can be delivered to hospitals within 30 minutes. Matternet, a Menlo Park, California company, was granted authorization to operate its drones over densely populated areas in Switzerland in March of 2017 and says that approval was a world's first Today, the company unveiled a Matternet station, which is a kind of white futuristic-looking postbox with a footprint measuring about 2 square meters, and it can be installed on rooftops or on the ground to send and receive packages by drone. The drone network is part of a partnership with Swiss Post and is a significant. It is significant because it is the first operating drone network flying in a dense urban area that is not a pilot run or in testing. Last month, Zipline announced plans to operate its blood-delivering service by drone in Tanzania and by early next year as well. And the pair of hospitals in Luango, Switzerland, had previously tested Matternet drone flights to deliver lab samples. Matternet plans to establish a regular service starting in early 2018. These types of diagnostics that need to be transported are urgent in nature, and they are in demand, says Andreas Rapitoulios, co-founder and CEO of Matternet. They have to wait for a courier. Sometimes they get taxis to do this type of thing. And when you have systems like this that is autonomous and reliable, it completely transforms your operations. Users operate the system via an application to create shipment details. And items are placed into a compartment box in the station before being loaded into a drone for delivery. Currently, the drones can hold up to a 2-kilogram or 4.4-pound package. Packages are then flown to another Matternet station where receivers can obtain their package by scanning a QR code. After a drone lands, it also swaps out its battery so the drone remains charged, and the maximum distance it can fly is 12.4 miles depending on weather conditions like high winds, and they have cruising speeds of 43.5 miles an hour. Matternet says that initially about 1 to 2 drones will operate per network, each station featuring an automated aerial deconfliction system that manages drone traffic over a station. Matternet also envisions in the future that the stations could be placed at grocery stores or at gas stations for deliveries. And Matternet says that the next markets they want to tackle are Germany and the UK once they have a solid footing in Switzerland. And this is insane. So let's add all these self-learning transportation technologies to a story that came out of a European publication called EE News. Artificial nanoneurons recognize speech for true AI. The nanoneuron uses an exceptionally stable magnetic oscillator, and each gyration of this nanocompass generates an electrical output which effectively imitates the electrical impulses used by biological neurons. In the next few years, these magnetic nanoneurons could be interconnected via artificial synapses, such as those recently developed for real-time big data analytics and classification. The nanoneuron showed the ability to recognize numbers spoken by a bunch of different individuals with a 99.6% accuracy. The long-term goal is to produce extremely energy-efficient miniaturized chips with the intelligence needed to learn from and adapt to the constantly ever-changing and ambiguous situations of the real world using artificial intelligence rather than machine learning. These electronic chips will have many practical applications, such as providing smart guidance to robots or autonomous vehicles, there you go, as well as helping doctors in their diagnoses and improving medical prostheses. The team includes researchers from the Joint French and Thales Joint Physics Units, as well as nanosciences and the Nanotechnology Center from the French CNRS and the Université of Paris, as well as the Center for Nanoscale Science and Technology in Maryland in the United States, and the National Institute of Advanced Industrial Science and Technology in Japan. The French National Center for Scientific Research is Europe's largest public research institution with over 1,100 laboratories. So what else is in stock for autonomous transportation? Well, the U.S. Navy has just launched its UUVRON, which is its first squadron of drones for undersea combat. Until now, underwater drones were only used for oceanographic surveys. So let's take that up a notch. The U.S. Navy has launched its first ever squadron of unmanned undersea vehicles to assist them in battle. The Unmanned Undersea Vehicle Squadron, or UUV RON, is likely to be the first of many military units to make use of robots under the sea, according to the reports. While there is a fleet of underwater robots put to use by the Navy, they serve a scientific survey purpose and are operated by the Military Sea Lift Command Oceanographic Office. I think we had read about some of those motherships that they were also developing to be able to launch all of those. UUV RON 1 will take on different duties than its protocol with U.S. Navy warships and submarines. And according to a Discovery Magazine report, it might one day be used to engage directly. UUV RON 1 is based on a Zebron 5, an unmanned undersea vehicle detachment, which has been in operation for over a year now. You know it. Transitioning our UUV detachment into the first UUV squadron. Captain Robert Gaucher, former commander of Devron 5. Why is this historical? Well, it is because in standing up UUV RON 1, it shows our Navy's commitment to the future of unmanned systems and undersea combat. The Navy's drones do not normally get attention or fanfare that the Air Force drones like Predator or Reaper drones get. And naval drones until now have mostly been tube-shaped torpedo-looking machines with fins, and they almost always go under the media radar. They might also be because the drones used by the Navy were usually used to survey the ocean floor. Last year, there was a lot of attention directed toward China seizing a U.S. Navy underwater drone that was conducting surveys. The incident caused further tensions when Donald Trump tweeted that China should keep the seized U.S. drone. Eventually, China did return the drone. The U.S. Navy seems to be intent on expanding the role of drones, and one such role could be the development of drones that can detect underwater mines. This is a job that has so far been carried out by sea lions and dolphins because of their ability to detect and find objects underwater, especially if it is murky. The U.S. National Geographic report on combat dolphins speaks of sea mammals that are being trained to spot and tag mines underwater, as well as detect unauthorized swimmers. This program has been used in the U.S. Navy since the 1960s. The Defense Advanced Research Project Agency, more affectionately known as DARPA, on the other hand, wants to build drones that can track and hunt enemy submarines. And speaking of DARPA, this is something that I kind of postulated about before, and now it is true. New DARPA radar sensor can capture video through clouds. The sensor can be fitted into a standard sensor gimbal on an aircraft and can capture real-time video through clouds. New radar sensor can capture real-time video through clouds has been developed demonstrated by the U.S. military. The U.S. Defense Advanced Research Project Agency, more affectionately known as DARPA, said that the sensor is part of its Video Synthetic Aperture Radar, or VISAR, program that they recently completed flight testing. The recent flight tests on the VISAR sensor marked a major program milestone toward our goal, proving that we can take uninterrupted live video of targets on the ground, even when flying through or above the clouds, says Bruce Wallace, program manager of DARPA's Strategic Technology Office, in a news release. Sensors on board the aircraft went blank whenever clouds obscured the view, but the synthetic aperture radar tracked ground objects continuously throughout the flight. Hopefully it's not using 230-point facial recognition software. DARPA's VISAR program started in 2013 to develop an extremely high-frequency sensor for targeting that can operate through clouds as effectively as the electro-optical and infrared, and these sensors operate also in clear weather. Cloud-penetrating radar exists in a number of formats, but there has not been a synthetic aperture sensor that fits in standard EOIR sensor gimbals on aircraft. It maintains frame rates fast enough to track maneuvering targets on the ground. Refining the VISAR sensor visualization software to provide operators a representation that they are used to seeing in the next step in the program We don't want operators in the back of an aircraft to need special radar training to interpret the sensor's data. We are working to make the visual interface as easy to interpret as existing sensor displays. So there you have it. So now, let's feed the machine all kinds of different information. We have Amazon working on Alexa-powered glasses, smart glasses, plus a home security system. As they feed data into this system, it starts to learn. We also have Google, who purchased a company last year or the year before called Nest. And Nest was home automation software. You control your thermostats and set up home security with the Nest system. Well, Nest now has a security camera that knows who is home with Google's new face technology. I don't think that these individuals, Google and Amazon, aren't working together with the feds. Nest Labs is adding Google's facial recognition technology to a high-resolution home security camera, offering a glimpse of the future, which is increasingly intelligent, internet-connected to computers as part of the Internet of Things, and understand what is going on in people's homes. The Nest Cam IQ unveiled in May. And no, my browser is hanging. It won't scroll. Oh, come on. Hold on 1 second. Let's try this other computer. Why can't I scroll all of a sudden? Okay, the camera will only identify people you select through Nest's app for iPhone and Android devices. It won't try to recognize anyone that the owner hasn't tagged. Wink. And if a Nest Camera IQ video spies a burglar in a home, law enforcement officials will have to identify the suspect through their own investigations and analysis, according to Nest. I wonder if it alerts them as well. Facial recognition is becoming more common on home security cameras. Netatmo, for instance, introduced a security camera touting facial recognition in 2015. The camera sells for about $200 or $100 less than the Nest Cam IQ. And the way that the Nest and the Netatmo cameras are being used doesn't raise serious privacy concerns because they are only verifying familiar faces, not those of complete strangers yet, says Jennifer Lynch, who specializes in biometrics as a staff attorney for the Electronic Frontier Foundation. But Lynch believes that privacy issues are bound to crop up as the resolution and zoom capabilities of home security cameras improve and as engineers develop more sophisticated ways to identify people even when an image is moving or a part of a face is visible. Storing home security videos in a remote data center also raises security concerns about the imagery being stolen by computer hackers. It definitely could become a slippery slope, she says. The privacy issue already is thorny enough that Nest has decided against offering facial recognition technologies in Illinois, where state law forbids the collection and retention of an individual's biometric information without prior notification and written permission. Well, listen to that. Nest's $10 a month subscription includes video storage for 10 days. Video can be stored up to 30 days with an upgraded subscription that costs $30 a month. The high-end camera supplements lower-resolution indoor and outdoor cameras that Nest will continue to sell for almost $200 each, and neither of the low-end cameras is equipped for facial recognition. Well, phew. Now wait, there's one more. If I can get it to load. Hold the phone. If I can get, I don't know what's going on all of a sudden. Come on. Everything is in slow-mo. Hopefully I'm still broadcasting. Doot-doot-doot-doot-doot. Oh, now my browser is completely crashing. What's my favorite song? Oh, do 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 do. Oh, here we go. All right, Nest Labs, the very same company owned by Google, adds a doorbell, and this was September 20th, 2017, adds a doorbell that can recognize familiar faces. Oh, look, don't answer the door, Johnny, because it's the guy we don't want to know. Home device maker Nest Labs is adding Google's facial recognition technology to a camera-equipped doorbell and rolling out a security system in its attempt to end its history of losses. The product announced Wednesday in September expanded on the internet-connected thermostats, smoke detectors, and standalone security cameras that Nest has been selling since its inception 6 years ago. And although Nest has been among the early leaders in an effort to make home appliances as intelligent as people's smartphones, it hasn't been able to make money in the frustration of its corporate parent Alphabet. And in an attempt to shake things up, Alphabet brought in the cable industry veteran Marwan Farswaz to replace Nest founder Tony Fadwell as CEO after Fadwell stepped down 15 months ago. Nest has been supplementing its existing product line with a slightly different choice until Wednesday's move into an entirely new category. The Hello doorbell Hello comes in with built-in video camera and speakers that will make it seem like it can recognize and talk to people. The doorbell will draw upon Google's facial recognition technology so it can warn a home's occupants when a stranger approaches. Google bought Nest for $3.2 billion in 2014 and then spun it off after it hatched Alphabet as its parent company. Now it is lumped into a group of risky companies venturing into new areas of technology that have collectively lost $10.6 billion during the last 3.5 years alone. Alphabet has not disclosed how much Nest has contributed to its losses in its other bets segment. Nest isn't announcing a new price for its doorbell until it hits the market sometime during the first 3 months of 2018. Google's facial recognition technology is coming to the doorbell in a few months after Nest introduces a more sophisticated indoor security camera featuring the same tools. Nest has also announced Wednesday that the same facial recognition tools will be deployed on an outdoor security camera that costs $349. I was just thinking, think about the use of this for some parent who has a teenage daughter. It can alert parents with a message to their smartphone anytime an unidentified boy is in the house. Apple is implanting a different form of facial recognition into its $1,000 iPhone X to unlock the device, telegraphing a future where cameras increasingly are going to be able to identify people with its lens within range, and the new phone will be released in November of 2017. Nest's usage of facial recognition hasn't yet sparked privacy concerns because it doesn't tap into Google's vast database of photos to automatically recognize people, but it could. Instead, a user of a Nest camera or a doorbell must manually tag and name people before the device recognizes someone. Nest's home security system is being billed as a simpler and more convenient way to protect a home than the alarms and other kind of sensors that have long been sold by other vendors. Nest's secure system will sell for $499 for its basic toolkit of devices. So there you have it. Facial recognition doorbell coming to a house near you. What if it's the delivery boy? So as we have all this facial recognition and these graphical processing units and Intel developing their Lohi chip with artificial intelligence integrated, scientists have found that there are now 27 distinct categories of emotion, thereby challenging the long-held assumption in psychology that humans have just 6 main categories, namely happiness, sadness, anger, fear, disgust, and surprise. They're working on training the machine on the spectrum of emotions so they will be able to not only identify you, but they will be able to tell what you are thinking and how you are acting. The team from the University of California, Berkeley, has created a multidimensional interactive map that shows how each emotional state is connected rather than being existing islands. We don't get finite clusters of emotions in the map because everything is interconnected and emotional experiences are so much richer and much more nuanced than previously thought, explains the lead author of the study. For this study, 853 people viewed sequences of a short video clip designed to evoke various feelings, and examples of themes covered in the clips were births, weddings, risky stunts, deaths, suffering, sexual acts, and natural disasters. And the participants were divided into three groups that each completed a reporting test to describe their emotional responses after watching each clip. So these 853 people fed their data into the machine. The first group openly described their responses to each of the 30 video clips, which Cowan says reflected a rich and nuanced array of emotional states, ranging from nostalgia to feeling grossed out. And the second group ranked the video in terms of how strongly they felt, more than the other 30 different responders, with examples including excitement, interest, sympathy, surprise, calmness, nostalgia, and confusion. Here, the team found that the subjects converged on similar responses, with more than half reporting the same response to each video. But using innovative statistical models and visualization techniques, the team then used that data to create a semantic map of human emotions, with each of the 27 emotional categories corresponding to a color. Cohen says that the aim is to shed light on the full palette of emotions that color our inner world. Our hope, he says, is that our findings will help other scientists and engineers more precisely capture the emotional states that underlie moods, brain activity, and expressive signals leading to the improvement in psychiatric treatments, an understanding of the brain's basis of emotion and technology responsive to those emotional needs. Yeah, remember, we were reading about the emotional AI coming. Well, don't worry about that, because China now has a system very much like Minority Report that plans to use AI to predict who will commit crimes in the future. Authorities in China are exploring predictive analysis, facial recognition, and other AI technologies to help prevent crime in advance. Based on behavior patterns, authorities will notify local police about potential offenders. Cloud Walk, a company headquartered in Guangzhou, has been training its facial recognition and big data rating systems to track movements based on risk levels. Those who are frequent visitors to weapon shops or transportation hubs are likely to be flagged in the system. Even places like hardware stores have been deemed high risk by authorities. A CloudWalk spokesman told the Financial Times, quote, "Of course, if someone buys a kitchen knife, that's okay. But if someone buys a sack and a hammer later, that person is becoming suspicious." CloudWalk software is connected to the police database across more than 50 cities and provinces and can flag suspicious characters in real time. This is where our future is headed, people. China is also using personal re-identification in crime prediction, identifying the same person in different places, even if they are wearing different clothes. "We can use re-ID to find people who look suspicious by walking back and forth in the same area or wearing different masks," Beijing University of Aeronautics and Astronautics Professor of Bodily Recognition Wang Biyu told the Financial Times. "Re-ID, it is also possible to reassemble someone's trail across a large area. China is in many ways the ideal place to use this kind of technology. The government has an extensive archive of data from citizen records and more than 176 million surveillance cameras. In other words, China has embarrassment of just big data. It can train AI systems effectively without any holes. It's not the only way that China is expanding their capabilities. Just revealed a massive, well-organized and planned China leader in global AI by 2020. She deploys the facial recognition in schools to count cheating and streets of even in bathrooms to limit. The Chinese government technology to prevent crime in police, our smart systems as well, We can know beforehand who might be a terrorist and who might do something bad, says China's Vice Minister of Science and Technology, Li Meng, to the Financial Times. However, however you feel about China's Minority Report-style plans, AI is making the world safer. And although AI is certainly a political surveillance tool, it can also be used to protect privacy, keep healthcare records private, secure financial transactions, and even prevent hacking. Wink. It is AI is responsible for smart security cameras, robot guards, and better military technologies. AI is also the reason self-driving cars are about to eliminate at least 90% of all traffic fatalities. And in other words, while you might object to certain applications, it is hard to argue that AI technology on the whole is going to mess with your future safety or privacy. So that is the global mantra, it seems. But will artificial intelligence save or destroy humanity is the big question. And if we can get this to load, if you ask me my personal opinion, I would say that AI is going to be our robot overlord of the future. There was a story that came out of San Francisco Weekly. Ex-Googler plans to create AI God. You knew this was going to happen. Our God is an awesome God, like a totally awesome bro. We just crushed it. The tech world has some issues with titanic hubris and occasionally casual approach to the end times, and like worshipful evangelicals accumulating canned tuna and ammo and watching the Middle East, the Peter Thiels of the world stockpile New Zealand citizenships and get their chompers capped so as not have to worry about root canals in a post-apocalyptic future with no Novocaine or dental hygienists. But don't worry about it, because we have technological innovation. Merely surviving Armageddon is insufficient for Anthony Lewandowski, an engineer at the Center of Autonomous Vehicle Patent Dispute between Uber and Google's Waymo. Oh, no. Everything went black. Wired magazine reported that he has created a new religious organization, or church, more or less, called Way of the Future, whose purpose, according to previously unreported state filings, is nothing less than to develop and promote the realization of a godhead based on artificial intelligence. If the eventual singularity ushers in a new era of consciousness, Lewandowski wants to be its high priest, its pontifex maximus, i.e. a deity. Like the date of the second coming, thought at various times to be October 24th, 1844, January 1st, 2000, May 21st, 2011, and the other day, just down the road, the singularity has been pushed back several times. Before progressives mock these silly believers, know that the date of the great liberal white whale, which is the coming Democratic majority, operates in a very similar fashion. So Lewandowski is probably, in his mind, just being prudent, but not actually marking an X on his Google calendar just yet. Granted, this isn't entirely bad. I am sure, and I'm not saying that, this is San Francisco Weekly, I am sure a 21st century God would have more enlightened views on slavery and selfishness than the Old Testament God, and would turn life into a better world for us. But you don't need to take a step in any direction to know that this concept is all bonkers, from Andy McDowell cautioning Bill Murray in Groundhog Day that he is not a god, to Jafar using his third wish to become a genie. It is easy for people in unique circumstances to consider themselves not merely blessed, but then Lewandowski probably hasn't taken to wearing robes with an astrological symbol on them just yet. But it isn't because he's rich and connected to other rich and connected people that who agree with his line of thinking that this endeavor doesn't rank him with Frank Chu and the 12 galaxies. I don't even know what that means. But by all accounts, Lewandowski is a brilliant roboticist who works 25-hour days. I've certainly never met him, but it is entirely possible he's one of those people who emerge from marathon coding sessions looking like someone from the year 2500 who worships an atomic bomb in a subterranean lair. But this seems like the move of a mad nerd who's savvy with tax law, not someone who is having a religious epiphany. Still, we know that for all his purported disruptions and self-congratulatory pats on the back to unshackle humanity, tech titans, heavy hitters, coil themselves around the Pentagon, Wall Street, and woo-woo spirituality in equal measure. The Wired article details how closely Lewandowski has also worked with DARPA, for instance, and none of those things belong to any project meant to expand human freedom. They are all to take your money and to surveil you. It is possible that an advanced AI births a deity who then slaughters us all to rid the world of spam and fills the universe with paperclips, but that doesn't keep me up at night. The gradual synthesis of algorithm-fueled bureaucracies that crush real human beings under their weight does, ding, and powerful people don't like democratic checks and balances. The fusion of tech and religion would give the ultra-elite a much, much more of a reason not to consider accountability in their actions and to evangelize on behalf of the ideology of omitting human lives from any moral calculus. And if the singularity, however dystopian, seems inevitable, then who are we peons to stop it? Dun, dun, dun. And that is exactly the point. As artificial intelligence begins to outpace humans, and we are finding out that AI is self-learning all over the place, learning to jump, run, pursue, how to identify, bag, and tag all on their own, and creating their own languages to communicate amongst themselves. Humanity is going to be overwritten. Artificial intelligence, is it in our future, but will it save or destroy humanity? And that is the question. If tech experts are to be believed, artificial intelligence has the potential to transform the world. But those same tech experts don't agree on what kind of effect this transformation will have on the average person. Some believe that humans will be much better off in the hands of AI systems, while others think that it will lead to our inevitable downfall. How could a single technology evoke such vastly differing responses from people within the tech community? Well, AI is software built to learn.